kind of a rock star. And I never really, you know, I'd be like, it would be almost like telling one of my cats, you know, I would just blink, blink about God. I never could get into it. And so I proceeded from there. And so between, say, 1971 and 2017, I had thin weeks and obese years. And I mean weeks. You know, abstinence only is like a prison for me. And I will say this, that it's the shabbiest of all the gifts that I've been given by this program, by my recovery, in my recovery. If it was the only thing I ever got, I'd take it and run like a thief. I always say that, because certainly it's better than nothing, but not much. And, you know, I used to, you know, I got my big book in 1979. I mean, I've had it for a really long time. I'm very distressed because I actually sent it off to be rebound. So all my notes, I have actually my mother's big book. Is the one that I'm using. And mine is being off to be rebound because it's falling apart and I just love it so much. And it has all my notes in it. But anyways, you know, I read this book for decades thinking that the second step said, came to believe in a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. But the fact is that it says that a power. And that was really significant to me because, you know, I spent years and years and years trying to just get it, quote unquote, get it. And I couldn't. And this God thing was a big, big stumbling block. And, you know, my life was, it wasn't quite back-to-back catastrophes, but I've had some pretty awful things happen to me. You know, starting in high school, I got in a car accident every weekend for 2 months. And I totaled each of my parents' cars twice and then all the ones in between. And so it's not like I don't, you know, had bad things happen to me. And I thought, you know, I was in a thin period and my mother had a massive stroke, what they call a bleeder. And she never recovered from it. And she got stroke-induced dementia. And, you know, I found out during that time, or I looked back on that time and I realized it for the first time that it really isn't a moral issue. Because we're Jewish and she wouldn't ever touch any, you know, we didn't keep necessarily kosher from kosher butchers, but we kept kosher style. You know, we didn't have ham or bacon in the house. And in her nursing home, she wouldn't touch any of that stuff. But she gained almost 100 pounds because she didn't understand, you know, they don't care. Most of the people they have to get to eat, you know, they have to watch to make sure they don't get too underweight. And my mother gained all this weight because she's a compulsive overeater through and through. And I realized this can't help it. And so I knew that I couldn't help it, but it didn't do me any good. I mean, that was, she had her stroke in 2000 and I didn't even have kids then. So I don't even remember. She died in 1996, she had her stroke. She lived, unfortunately, for 10 more years. And, you know, I thought that was the big one, you know, the big earthquake. But it wasn't. I cried to her when her brain was still too swollen to even open her eyes that I didn't want to eat. And she comforted me. She said, you don't have to eat. But Nancy P did have to eat. And I ate and ate and ate. And, you know, my cycle of eating would be, you know, I'd wake up in the morning and I'd know. I'd think, I hope I don't eat today. This is before I even open my eyes, or I'm definitely not going to eat today, or I might eat today, or it looks like I'm going to eat today. And 99% of the time, 99.99% of the time, I would eat. And I did that, you know, off and on. I, you know, and then one day I'd say, all right, I'm going to go to a million meetings. I'm going to, you know, I'd call it, you know, a friend in program. And I'd say, I can't stop eating, which is very hard for me to say. And they'd say, well, what worked in the beginning? And, you know, in the beginning, you know, when I graduated from college at 185 pounds, my father had, died shortly after I got out of college. And, you know, and I was thin when I graduated from college. And then after he died, I stayed home And my mother made all my meals, weighed and measured my meals, packed my lunch, and put my dinner in front of me when I got home. And I went to a meeting every single day. Well, that's not practical to do when you're married with children and, you know, you have responsibilities. But I would just, you know, stuff like that. What worked in the beginning? I'm going to go to a billion meetings. I'm going to write down, you know, do my writing, you know. And so I talk about this dumb journal that I kept because it was dumb. And I would say the number of days of absence I had, one. I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. Then the next day, one. I totally surrender. I'm tired of eating. One. Please help me. One. Every day was the first, you know, I couldn't put the food down. And I was writing to a God that I didn't believe in or that I couldn't identify with or whatever. There was some huge disconnect. And I never got there until, you know, then the real big one happened, which was then at that time, my 14-year-old daughter, 14 or 15-year-old, started cutting and burning herself. And I was just howling with fear and pain and rage because I would have absorbed that pain for her in a heartbeat, but I couldn't. And not only couldn't I, she cared about me, but she was trapped in her own prison. And she couldn't stop doing that. And if you take out, you know, food and compulsive overeating and you put in cutting and self-harm, there she is, a size four, you know, and she, you know, she was in her own prison. She actually told me later, much later, that the only reason she didn't commit suicide is because it would upset me too much. And, you know, in my mind, I burst into tears in my mind and I said, but all I said out loud was, however you get there, my girl, you know, I'm so glad. Sorry. You know, and today, I don't think she does that anymore. I wouldn't say that I'm comfortable with her, the way that she lives her life, because I can't really identify with it. She's shy and she's, you know, doesn't crave the company of other people. And she has a few good friends and that's how she exists. And I'm like, oh my God, is she okay? Oh, you know, but you know, I learned the meaning of powerless when I was putting, you know, bacitracin ointment on her own self-inflicted wounds. And she just looked at me as I sobbed over her arms. And oh my God, I never thought I would do this. I'm so sorry. But that's what it took to get Nancy P, you know, to admit that I was powerless over food and that my life was unmanageable. And even then, I ate during that horrible time when she was so sick. You know, every day I had to stop at Dunkin' Donuts and get a dozen donuts and eat them on the way to work. And every day on the way home, when I got the dinner for, you know, picked up the dinner at the grocery store, I'd buy a bunch of other stuff. And, you know, that went on until one day I couldn't stand it anymore. And I was sobbing in my car. You know, I had just eaten my dozen donuts. I was waiting to pick my daughter up from school. I have two children, an older son and her, she's my younger one. And I was sobbing in my car, having just eaten my dozen donuts. And I called someone that I've known for 40 years, 45 years in the program. And she said, Nancy, I haven't talked to you in so long. And I said, well, I hope we're still friends. And she said, you must be calling about vision, which I was not because I had never heard of it. And I said, well, and she said, let me tell you about it. And she couldn't get the words out fast enough. She was stuttering and stumbling and, oh, you've got to, you know, and I burst into tears and she said, what is it? What is it? Tell me. And I told her like in 5 minutes, what I just told you, you know, like in 2 minutes, I said, you know, I just confessed all of it and what a failure I was as a mother, how frightened I was and how angry I was that I couldn't make this, you know, my whole life. I lived through my life like a bulldozer, like I'd write a check or I'd make the force of my personality make things go my way. You know, I always say there's nothing I liked better than a good fight with a bank or an insurance company. And, you know, I'd force those people to do my bidding and, you know, I can be pretty persuasive. And, you know, this was just like, it wasn't a brick wall. It was like a force field from Star Trek. You know, it was like, there was nothing, not a nuclear bomb wasn't going to get through that horrible barricade. And so she listened to me. And the last thing that I said to her was the most private personal thing, which was that I couldn't stop eating. And she said, she didn't say anything except one thing she said, I haven't picked up in 4.5 years. And she gave me the number. I mean, everybody's talking about A Vision for You, and I'm on that bandwagon. And I called in on December 1st of 2017, and I have not had to hurt myself with food since that day. But I had felt better before, right? You know, here are some of the methods we tried. And my methods were eat this, don't eat that, eat that, don't eat this. You know, weigh and measure, don't weigh and measure, eat sugar, don't eat sugar, more meetings, fewer meetings, different meetings. And then the perennial favorite was get another sponsor. Now, I will say that I did get a Vision sponsor, but I call her my real sponsor. I've talked to her on the phone 5 days a week for 35 years. And she is my dear friend, and she couldn't help me. You know, she couldn't, but she loved me anyways. And, you know, I dial into Vision and I felt better, but, you know, of course, who wouldn't feel better? People are, they're thrilled that they found the solution. And I said, all right, I'm going to have to dip my toe in. So I got a Vision sponsor. And, you know, I used to rave about my sponsor, and another friend told me, you know, you rave about her, but anybody could have done that if you're ready, because when you're ready, no force on earth can stop you. And if you aren't ready, no force on earth or elsewhere can make you do it. And so we go through the steps, and, you know, I'm in my bedroom. We live in a Victorian, so our doors are solid wood. They're like really soundproof. And I'm in my room in the bedroom upstairs, and the whole rest of the family is elsewhere, not on that floor. And I thought to myself, I've got to tell her. She's going to kick me out. She's going to dump me. So I whispered to her, I don't think this is going to work for me. And she said, why not? And I said, because I don't think I believe in God. I'm not sure. And she said, oh, well, you haven't had a spiritual awakening yet, so don't worry about it. And I thought to myself, okay, she's the crazy one, but I'm going to do what she says, because I haven't eaten in a month or 6 weeks or whatever. And so we get to, you know, we're in We Agnostics. And on page 47, 46 and 47, which are my two favorite pages in the whole book, she said to me, you have to decide what you want God to be and what you want God to do for you. And I said to myself, because I would have done anything, just make the pain go away. I said, all right, I'll take that challenge. And I thought, what do I want? I never really thought about it. Because, you know, like for 47 years, I thought about fake it till you make it, act as if, borrow mine, use the group, you know, whatever people, you know, nature, you know, that's what I would say. Yeah, I think I'll have nature be my higher power. Yeah, I like mountains and whales and Africa, you know, whatever sort of big nature, you know. My husband and I went on a vacation once to Washington State, Oregon, British Columbia. You know, I called it our big nature vacation. We climbed Mount Rainier, you know, like beautiful, you know, big nature. And, you know, none of that's going to do the trick. You know, I can be as nature loving as I want, but faith without works is dead. If I don't do anything, I can sit in the lotus position on a mountain for a year and I'll come back down and go right into Dunkin' Donuts, you know, like it's not going to help me. And so I said, all right, I'm going to think about that. So I decided I'm going to throw out everything I've ever heard, imagined, was taught, learned, read, wrote, was near, you know, everything about God, and chuck it and say, just what it says. I'm going to have my own conception. And they don't spend a lot of time talking about that. They don't reinforce it. That's the only thing that if I had a bone to pick that I would say is a shortcoming, but I don't even feel that, because you either want it or you don't. And if I can get it, trust me, anybody can. And I thought, okay, what do I want? And first thing, not God. I don't like that word. It doesn't make me feel connected. I don't feel serene. I just feel like I'm wearing an itchy sweater and that I'm at a, you know, I showed up to a knife fight with a teddy bear. Like, I'm just not, it just didn't work for me. So, okay, gone. Second thing, no knees. I wasn't raised that way. That doesn't, again, doesn't make me feel serene. I don't feel connected. The only thing that I feel closer to is the floor, and dust bunnies under my bed are not interesting to me. Okay, chuck it. No God, no knees. And so then I'm left with, okay, what do you want? You can go on forever and say, this is what I don't want, that, and don't want this. But what do I want? And I think of it as like building a swing set. I have 8 or 10 big, huge pipes and then 4 million nuts, bolts, and screws. And I thought about it and I said, well, what can I embrace? You know, because I couldn't have anything, I couldn't pull it out of a hat and say, oh, this will work, because that wouldn't work for me. And I thought, well, the first thing that came to mind, just flew into my head, is I can embrace trust. That's not offensive to me. It doesn't turn me off. Okay, I can deal with that. And I went on like that, and I can embrace compassion and friendliness and gentleness and generosity. Okay, I'm building my swing set. Every once in a while, I test the weight. Yep, I can jump on it. I can invite the other kids to play. The weather's not going to blow it over. And I kept going, integrity and dependability and patience. And then I started to get bored because, you know, I was bored, and that's what Nancy P does. And I thought, and like any good direct marketer, because I started my career in direct marketing, I reserve the right to change or amend this anytime I want without notice. So that like took care of the rest of it, make an addendum anytime I want. And that was, okay, so now I have the concept. Then more importantly, what do I want this to do for me? And I was in my car driving, and all of a sudden it came to me, make me into those things. And when I say that, it still gives me a little shiver, because it wasn't that I wasn't kind and generous and, you know, dependable and patient. I was, and I am, or I wasn't really, but I, you know, I was a little bit, but I wasn't enough. I wasn't consistently so, or to enough of a degree to feel like I could be helpful to other people. And certainly, you know, myself, I wasn't very easy on myself, but that was like, you know, like sort of, I got touched by a magic wand, like ping. And then, you know, this was my cornerstone set in place, and no later vicissitude has shaken it. But, you know, back on page 28, which is my other most favorite page in the book, because it's so significant, I'm just going to get here so that I can read it. It says, you know, what seemed at first a flimsy reed has proved to be the loving and powerful hand of God. A new life has been given us, or if you prefer, a design for living that really works. Now, I don't like any of the ways that, you know, they say you can, you know, get your own conception and everything. But then they sort of give you all these suggestions, like spirit of the universe, creative intelligence, or whatever it says about that stuff. And that is all abhorrent to me. I can't stand it. I don't want that. And anytime the reason I don't want it is because I call it my buddy. I want this thing that takes care of me, that keeps me recovered, to have no limitations. Because it says, you know, I mean, I'm going to jump back and forth here between page 47 and page 28. It says, I cannot accept as surely true the many articles of faith which are so plain to him. So it was comforting to learn that we could commence at a simpler level. Well, I just told you what my simpler level was. And so far, nearly four years later, I have seen no reason to change it, because it works for me. And it's never not worked in any situation, you know? I mean, I've binged my brains out because I dinged my manicure, and that's when I'm going to get my nails done 6 days later, and I've binged my brains out. And when my daughter was hacking herself up and burning herself to a crisp, I couldn't stop eating. So, you know, all pain is created equal. And, you know, I also feel like, you know, I'm always searching. I'm always, you know, I study these steps. I take other women through. I talk to other people on the phone, newcomers and old timers alike. And I learn something all the time. And the latest thing that I learned yesterday, I'll share it with you because it's so awesome. I was talking to someone that called me up to speak at a meeting, and we got into a conversation, and I said, the lurking notion and self-knowledge are really tricky because they mask themselves as spiritual experience. You know, oh yeah, that's the silver bullet. Oh yeah, that's what I haven't been doing. That's all that I have to do, is this one other thing. And that, you know, you learn something like, yeah, I'm an alcoholic compulsive overeater. And oh yeah, that's all I need to know. Well, that's not all that Nancy P needs to know. Nancy P needs to know everything every day. I have to do this work all the time. And it says, you know, at the top of page 47, it says, at the start, this is all we needed. You know, if the first sentence, it does say, when therefore we speak to you of God, we mean your own conception of God. Okay, good. This applies too to other spiritual expressions, which you find in this book. It doesn't spend enough time. That's it. That's all the only time that they say that. And then they say, at the start, this was all we needed to commence spiritual growth, to affect our first conscious relation to God as we understood him. Afterward, and afterward to me mean, you know, afterward it says, we found ourselves accepting many things which then seemed entirely out of reach. To me, afterward means after step 11, not after I just decide, yeah, I'm going to do this. I mean, I have at step two, I have way more in front of me than I have behind me. You know, I have the next 10 steps in front of me. This is, you know, in a way, this is chump change. I mean, I've just barely begun to formulate this conception that's going to help me get past this awful period of my life and put me on the road to recovery. Because, you know, I really feel like that day in the car when I was sobbing my heart out to my friend, that my buddy was looking, having coffee with the other ones and said, you know what? I think this one's had enough. I think I'm going to pluck her back from the gates of death and set her on the right path. I really feel like that is what happened because, you know, as Carmela said, I don't want to crosstalk, but she said, you know, you got to decide if you want to live or if you want to die or whatever she said. But, you know, I didn't have a choice. I had alternatives. It was either going to be, you know, go on to the bitter end or accept spiritual help. And so I really wanted to get better. I desperately, desperately wanted to get better. And, you know, it says, so we used our own conception, however limited it was. Or in my case, I feel not limited. I don't feel like it limits me in any way. I feel like my, anytime I try to put like a name to it, like the creative intelligence, spirit of the universe, all that, that's confining it. That's saying, well, it's only that. I think of it as like spilled water on the counter. Like it just sort of goes where it goes. And I don't try to contain it. I don't want to contain it. I want it to be like, you know, like something that sort of takes over and does for me what I cannot do for myself. And then going back to page 28, this is for anybody who has trouble or who is agnostic and thinks that it might not work. I'll just go through this, this page. It's so wonderful. It says, you know, so I read you what seemed at first a flimsy read proved to be the loving and powerful hand of God, but I don't like that. So I read that as, what seemed at first to be a flimsy read has proved to be the loving and powerful hand of a design for living that really works. And then just under that, it talks about William James and the varieties of religious experience. It says, basically, faith can be acquired. I don't care about the rest of it. All I focused on was faith can be acquired. That means that I could probably get it on Amazon if I could figure out the Boolean, you know, the command to write, you know, like the Boolean code. And it says, there's a multitude of ways in which men have discovered God. Okay. And then they say, we have no desire to convince anyone that there's only one way by which faith can be acquired. If what we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all, it means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, or color, are the children of a living creator. You know, Nancy P is not too into that. With whom we may form a relationship upon simple and understandable terms, as soon as we're willing and honest enough to try. You know, again, on page 53 in We Agnostics, it says, we threw up our hands and said, we don't know. And that's where I was in the car that day. I just don't know. And that's when I surrendered. But my surrender at that time wasn't, it was like a flat screen TV that I was lugging around with me. It was bulky, not too heavy, but not, it wasn't, you know, like, why would you lug around a flat screen TV when you go to get your nails done or when you go to the grocery store? Like I was surrendered, but it wasn't operational. And then later it says, you know, when we realize, you know, we saw, what is it? Oh, this is not my marked up book, but I think I know the pages. Page 52, yeah. When we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. Here's the operative sentence for me. Our ideas did not work, but the God idea did. So I have my conception that works for me. I'm good to go. That's when I realized maybe this will work for me. You know, maybe. You know, you'd think 50 years in or 47 years in, I'd have a million friends and no. I mean, I did have some friends, but considering the number of people that I had run across and the number of meetings I'd gone to, you'd think I'd have like literally hundreds of acquaintances and friends. No, somebody would say, hi, Nancy, how you doing? And I'd look at them with a death glare and that would take care of that, you know? So I began to see that it would work, that it could work for me if promise, consequence, or threat, that's what if means, if I did this work exactly as it says in the book, exactly in the order that it says. So going back to page 28, so I've got this thing, you know, I'm willing and honest enough to try. And then it says here, this is so awesome. Those having religious affiliations will find here nothing disturbing to their beliefs or ceremonies. There is no friction among us over such matters. Well, I'm living proof that those with no religious affiliation and no religious convictions will also find here nothing offensive to their beliefs and ceremonies. Like, I've sponsored two Orthodox Jewish women. They came to me. I didn't go shopping. I don't shop for sponsees. And they found something that they liked in me. And I have nothing but respect and joy in their, you know, their observance, their love of their religion. I love that. I love that they love it. And, you know, they're probably not here because it's the Sabbath. So I'll tell you confidentially, I feel like I dodged a bullet, you know, like good for them, good for me. We're both the same. We both love where we are. And I have a note in my own book that says, you know, religion is a convenient path, but it's not the only path. And the operative word there is path, not convenient. Because, you know, I used to think of God as a drop-down menu, you know, crescent, cross, or star. It doesn't matter. I didn't like anything that was on offer. So I had to take a spiritual machete and bushwhack my way through the jungle to find a way to get onto the highway, you know, and all religions say the same thing. They say, if you join our religion, we'll protect you. We'll keep you safe from scary neighbor. You know, it's always on the road of life. You know, they say, we'll protect you. We'll keep you out of scary neighborhoods. And the pavement will be nice and paved and no broken sidewalks and, you know, nice neighborhood, clean. The trash is all picked up. And that's what we'll do for you. Well, that wasn't working for me. So I had to figure out my own way. And, you know, I don't even know if they say this, I don't hear it too much anymore. But when I first came in, they'd say, take what you want and leave the rest. And I thought that meant only do what you want and don't do anything else, you know? And so all that what I was quote willing to do was eat and be thin. I just wanted to eat and be thin. And if I thought about it in any depth at all, it was like, please make me thin and serene. I promise I'll do all that other stuff. I'll backfill. Well, you know, I'm a lying, conniving, cheating, stealing, compulsive overeater. So my word is not good. And I will say one last thing before I get to the point. The first letter of the doctor's opinion says you may rely absolutely on anything they say about themselves. I love that sentence because today my word is good. And what I say, I mean, and I do what I say to the best of my abilities. But getting back to page 28, like I hacked my way through that jungle and I got to a place that I can live with and embrace and enjoy. And today I can honestly say that I have no problems. I don't have any problems. The only thing that happens in my life is, I'm in my little car on the road of happy destiny. And my car, by the way, is the stripped down model, the strippedest down model that you could imagine. It essentially is four wheels, one chair, and an elastic that you hold back and like let it rip. And that's my car. And so the only thing that happens to me is things either slow me down or they speed me up. And I want to maintain a constant speed. And you know, when I can say that, I have all the things that it says in this book happen to me. You know, the bedevilments, I still get afraid. I still get angry. I'm a human being. But what does it say that, you know, the thing that makes that made my surrender operational was the knowledge that if it worked for them, it would work for me if I did what it said. And what does it say to do? Starting on the first page of the doctor's opinion, right up through, you know, the last chapter about the steps working with others is fellowship, the verb, not the noun. And, you know, it is imperative to have contact with other compulsive overeaters, because nowhere in this book does it say definitely rely on your own thinking because we know you'll make the right decision. It never says that. It always says, you know, check with other people, seek counsel. You know, when fear grips me, you know, my daughter's in college now. I mean, she graduated from high school. She's in college. You know, that itself is, you know, I found my better word than miracle. It's miraculosity. I made it up. Isn't it great? And so that's like a miraculosity that's in my life that she's in college. However, she has come home every single weekend. And I'm, you know, when I went to college, I was like, woo, I'm out of here. You know, I was like, you know, immediately like poorly behaved and, you know, smoking, drinking, you know, sex with strangers, that type of thing. So I couldn't wait to get away. She has come home every weekend. And I said to my, you know, I sought counsel. I didn't call another compulsive overeater and say, I'm afraid, I resent, oh, you know, I sought counsel with the person that knows me and her the most, my husband. And I didn't say, I'm afraid. I said, does it worry you that she comes home? And he said, no, she's homesick. And when she's not so homesick, she won't come home so much. Done. And I'll give you one more example about what, you know, coming to believe that a power, not in a power, but that a power will take care of me, has done for me. It does exactly that. All I have to believe is that it will take care of me. And I don't have to worry about anything else. It's like, you know, it's like, I don't know, bringing your car in for an oil change. You don't have to worry that they're not going to change the oil. You pick up your car and the oil is changed. That's kind of what this is. And, you know, starting with the surrender and then building the relationship, you know, like getting a relationship means that all of the promises without exception have come true for me in spades, in the highest suit, all of them. Why? Because I don't, like, I never think about food anymore. I mean, I think about it a little because I buy it all and I prepare it all. But I mean, I don't think about it in terms of sneaking, cheating, you know, like there's no more dozen donuts that I have to throw away before I get to my office. None of that stuff. I go, last night I went to a party at our fake country club. It's like fake, but it's a little club that no one but us in our zip code can go into. And, you know, I ate and brushed and flossed my teeth before we left. So I never even think that, you know, I just don't think about it. But also the intuitive thought or action comes to me with amazing regularity. I rarely make a blunder anymore where there's damaged relationships, where there's crying, where there's apologies. I just don't do that anymore. And, you know, the best example that I can give about that is my son, who spends way too much time with my butthead brother, who's not a butthead at all. He's got a master's in industrial engineering and has a very responsible job, but unfortunately owns not one, but two Harley Davidson motorcycles, and told my son what a great idea it would be to have a motorcycle. So he comes home and he says, I'm getting a motorcycle because Uncle Don says it's a good idea. And I was like, you know, I couldn't, like, it's so unpopular in the compulsive overeater department, and it was in the mom department, and worse in the compulsive overeater department because I couldn't control it. I did try to manipulate it. I called my brother and I said, could you leave off the motorcycle talk for crying out loud? Only I didn't say for crying out loud. And he said, no, I'm not going to do that. I ride bikes and too bad. And I was like, ugh. And I, you know, months, he, you know, the one fault that my son has is he tends to sort of rub up against tender spots. And he'd say, I'm getting a motorcycle. What do you think about that? And what I wanted to do was stab him in the eye and then burn my brother's house down. But I didn't do any of that. I said nothing until finally I said to him, I just don't want you to get hurt. And he said, I'm not going to get hurt. I'm going to be careful. And I was like, I don't want you to be hamburger on the street trying to be graphic. No, that's not going to happen. And then this is the intuitive thought I said, or action. I said, if I could just ask you to please be sensitive to the way that I feel. And that's, I stopped talking. I didn't say that would be great. I just, if I could ask you to please be sensitive to the way that I feel. And he looked at me, he said, I can do that. And he stopped talking about it. And who drove him to his motorcycle safety class? Me. And picked him up. It was a 3-day class and I picked him up every day. And I emailed my brother and I told him, I said, I can't think of a better mentor for him to show him how to be safe on the road. And thank you for looking out for my most precious cargo in my life. And, you know, no relationships were damaged. There was no shrieking. There was no threats. You know, my son's in college. No, if you don't do this, if you do that, we're not going to pay, you know, none of that. There was nothing. No, it was like, it was the most amazing thing. And it's not like, I didn't have a white light experience. I just told you how I got this connection with my buddy. It was like a cerebral exercise in my car. But, you know, it talks about, the book says, we will tell you what we have done. Bill says, you know, I turned my life and my will, whatever, over to God as I then understood him. There's plenty of room. Like, I started out at this spot and I haven't felt the need to amend the concept of my buddy in any way, shape, or form. But my buddy itself has grown. It's grown big without me feeling like I've changed anything. And the thing that made it grow, the elixir that makes any crop grow, thrive in any soil, is fellowship. counsel with others, contact with other compulsive overeaters every day without exception. You know, I was assigned to make 2 phone calls a day. And in the beginning, that's when my daughter was, you know, was so sick. And, you know, the old Nancy would have been like, in my dumb journal, I made my calls, but they were all voicemails, but I tried, you know, that didn't do it. That didn't cut it anymore. I called people until I got 2 connections. And I found myself, you know, that was when my daughter was, you know, she had been hospitalized. She, you know, we would take her to these emergencies. They call them CBATs, community-based acute treatment centers, like at 10 o'clock at night or 9 o'clock at night or 7 o'clock at night. And she'd be gone for 2 weeks and back, you know, like taking a linen shirt to the dry cleaner. As soon as you take it out of the bag, it starts to wrinkle. And that's what was happening to her. She would be okay for a few days. And then, you know, I'd get a call at work. I had PTSD, I think, from like, you got to come get her. You know, she's, whatever she's doing, she won't go to class. She's lying down in the hall. She won't move, you know, and it was like, it was awful. And, you know, that, those phone calls saved me. I didn't tell people about it. I just called up and said, hi, this is how I learned this through, you know, the first gift I think that I was given was, you know, that I don't talk about myself, about my problems willy-nilly to just anybody, because that's like living in the same yucky poopy diaper. Like, why would I want to do that? I said, hi, it's Nancy P. I'm just making outreach calls. How are you doing? And then, you know, that was in the beginning. And so I had this shtick and I still say the same thing. So tell me about yourself. Are you new to OA or Vision or neither or both? Or what's your story? And then they talk and then I talk and then I'd get off the phone. Sometimes I'd be on the phone for 20 seconds. Sometimes I'd be on the phone for 10 minutes, 2 minutes, 20 minutes, 40 minutes, I'd hang up the phone, I'd burst into tears and I'd cry and then I'd make another phone call. And those people saved me and they don't even know that they saved me. And, you know, I surrendered and then I knew that I could get better because it said in the book that I could get better. And what did I do? I engaged in fellowship. And anybody, you know, I talk about it like, you know, I'm very, very agnostic. I mean, the only reason I'm not an atheist is because if I'm wrong, I don't want to be wrong, but you know, it's like hedging my bets. And, but I depend the most, it says, you know, nothing contributes more to the rehabilitation of these men than the altruistic movement growing up among them. And for us, for me, the altruistic movement isn't enough. It has to be, you know, altruism, service to others with not without thought of reimbursement or, you know, compensation and, you know, a faith that works for me. And, you know, there's a lot of people like me. And if anybody here is like me, feel free to call because I get a lot of calls from people that say, what do you do? How do you do it? I'm not getting it. I don't know what to do. And I tell them what I'm telling you. I have no new message. I say the same thing to all the time, every phone call all the time. And this fellowship, and I mean the verb, you know, certainly Overeaters Anonymous as a fellowship has saved me, but the engagement with other people, they're not lying when they say that, that nothing ensures immunity, the first sentence of the 7th chapter, more than intensive work with other alcoholics. And that is, I have found that to be absolutely true. Nothing, you know, I'm this nascent, faithful person, like I have this concept, but what am I going to do? How am I going to make it grow? I mean, if I leave it left to myself, it's not going to grow. It's going to wither and die. That's why this engagement with other people is, it's not water. It's elixir. It's magic. It will make it grow and bloom multiple times in a season. You know, I'm a gardener, so I'm always hacking things down and transplanting things and planting new things and, you know, whatever. I'm always chopping and cutting and planting and moving and everything grows because I take good care of it. And that the fellowship talking to other people has ensured like insurance. That's the one thing I will say. I always tell this kind of a joke. I do have a secret addiction and it's buying insurance. And we have all kinds of insurance. Our homes insured, our cars are insured, our lives are insured. We even have long-term critical care health insurance in case we have a stroke or something. And when I pay my AAA bill, which I just did a month or two ago, they always have like an offer, $250,000 for only $50 a year. And I always show it to my husband and say, hey, you know, pretty good deal, you know, like $50 for $250,000. He's always like, no, Nancy, we're not buying any more insurance. We have enough. We're fine. or something else would be like, hey, AARP, now I'm 61, so we get the AARP. Hey, you know, they're offering insurance, you know, looks like it could be good. He's like, no, Nancy, we're not buying any more insurance. But that's the one thing. So to me, when I read that word insurance, I'm like, sign me up. I want more insurance. And what it is, you know, like the first step is admit. The second step is decide. No, the second step is accept. And the third step is decide. So I'm here at the accept and I've embraced it. Like what can I embrace as a power that, you know, this buddy, what do I want? Like the cutest guy on the football team. That's who my buddy is. You know, he's like, not he, it, whatever, my spilled water, you know, it works for me. And I have never been able to have such freedom, not only freedom, but I thrive through the calls and the contact that I have with other people. And it's sort of like, you know, the shy other side of the aisle voter, you know, the shy Democrat that votes Republican or the shy Republican that votes Democrat, whatever it is. You know, if you are one of those shy sort of, you know, fake it till you make iters, and you want to explore something that, you know, nobody died when I said that I was an agnostic. And in fact, exactly the opposite happened to me. Not only did I not die, I began to really grow and change and embrace. And I think that's all I have to say. With that, I'll pass. If anyone has any questions, I'll leave some time for questions.
Hi, Nancy. This is Leslie. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Leslie.
I don't have a question that I can think of. You covered everything so beautifully, but I just have to tell you, I laughed.
We lost you at last.
A spirit of what is moving through you. Uh-oh.
No, you're bad, but your connection isn't very good, I guess.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
No?
No, yeah, I can.
This is a time for Q&A, Leslie. So if you have a question, if not, we'll move to the next hand. Do you have a question?
Go ahead and move. You can't hear me.
Jean, you're next. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. That was awesome, Nancy. Thank you so much. My question is, what is the difference between a 12-step sponsor, a food sponsor, and a vision sponsor?
Well, I'm not really a food sponsor because I don't really care about food. The only conversations that I have with my sponsees about food is I help them figure out what their alcoholic foods are. And I discuss how, you know, like I don't eat nuts, for example. So if a sponsee says I can eat cashews, but not almonds, I say, well, I hate coffee ice cream, but if there was nothing else, I'd dive right in. So, you know, I encourage them like that. I'll say that. And then we make our list. And then I say, take this to a professional, which I am not, a doctor, a nutritionist, a dietitian of some sort, and tell them as much or as little as you want about OA, but make it clear that you can, that they should give you a food plan that you can, that works for you, that you can't eat these things in any way, shape or form. That's as much of a food sponsor as I am. I don't want to know. They can send me their food if they want, but I don't really care. And then a step sponsor, that's what I am. I carry the message and I practice the principles. And I'm not, like, I tell this to my sponsees all the time. I'm not vested in their recovery. I'm vested in my recovery. Their job is to take care of themselves. And if they have any questions, they can ask me. But I'm not their... I only carry the message. I only go to the book. I mean, I'm not unsympathetic, you know, I'm not, I am sympathetic, but it's up to them. You know, if they don't want to do this, like I can't make them, you know, I used to get upset when they lied to me. And then I talked to my sponsor, my new sponsor. And she said, why would you think, what steps do you want? If it's anything like 1, 2, and 3, she said, why? They don't even know how to tell the truth yet. So don't be mad that they lie. And so I was like, that is great insight. So now I don't care if they lie, you know? So I take them and, you know, I take them through as I was taken through. I mean, I follow the book. I love this book. This book is the only book that I need. And it says there's no problem too big or too small, right? There isn't, because, you know, I didn't eat so much as an extra grain of rice. Like I surrendered, I got better, and my daughter got much worse. we went on a family vacation to Europe, and we got back 2 days later. She was in the hospital for the rest of the summer and into the next school year. And I had to go visit her every night in a locked ward where we couldn't even bring plastic utensils because the kids steal them and use them as weapons, like to hack themselves up, you know. And I didn't eat so much as an extra grain of rice, not one bite. And, you know, so I'm super vested in my own recovery, and I know it can be done no matter what the level of pain is, because I don't know if there's any more pain that you could experience, that I have experienced, you know, that I could experience than that. And then as far as a vision sponsor, you know, it's true that the people, like, I found personally my own, this is only my opinion, not OA's opinion, not anybody else's opinion, just my opinion and my experience, was that, you know, I've been in Overeaters Anonymous for 50 years. I've been to a lot of meetings in that time, a lot of different places. I have some, you know, I have some street cred, if you will. And I had never walked into a meeting like that before. You know, like, they don't, you know, compulsive overeaters are like, you know, I went to an AA Big Book meeting once, and the chairs were set up auditorium style. And I made a suggestion to have them in a circle so that everybody could see everybody else. And they're like, yeah, good idea. At an OA meeting, that would have to be brought up to group conscience for 3 months, then voted on, then thought about, then maybe they would do it. You know, like, they're like that, you know. A lot of people in Overeaters Anonymous think that they can get in front of this, you know. Like, this is why I say abstinence is not the goal. I could have a truckload, train car with a million Tupperwares all weighed out and measured out food, and it's not going to do me any good. I could buy a scale from NASA and weigh a speck of dust in space with no gravity, and it's still not going to do me any good. But in vision, they seem to really be at that space. Whereas in other OA meetings, there's a, you know, if you've been to OA meetings, they have this kind, they have that kind. You know, I try not to trash talk any other, you know, there's all kinds of sects and little groups, and, you know, there's been spinoffs and other, you know, anonymous, you know, 12-step programs. And I try really hard not to trash talk them. I try to, again, privately rejoice that I dodged that particular bullet if I don't like what I'm hearing, if they're calling me. But, you know, what I found in A Vision for You was exactly what I wanted, and nothing that I don't want. Are there personalities in A Vision for You? There absolutely are. You know, for sure, there are people that I, you know, that I don't like listening to, and I'm sure there are people that don't like listening to me. But, you know, what it is a super duper duper healthy OA meeting. And Big Book step study meeting. And that's where, you know, like, my mother 40 years ago or 50 or whenever, she used to say the real recovery is in the Big Book. And I used to go to Big Book meeting. I got my Big Book when I was 19. But I'd go to a meeting where they'd have them on the table, and I'd pick one up and we'd read. And I'd think to myself, I'm not seeing it here. And I, you know, I'd raise my hand and say, I don't get it. Like in math class, I'm sorry, I don't get that. You know, and I never got it until I went to Big Book step study. And even then, you know, I talked smack and I was eating, you know, I wrote my fourth step. I went through the Big Book step study process once before, and I wrote my fourth step 6 nights a week for 1 hour for 3 years. It was 550 pages because no resentment was too small for the turnaround. I get into vision, and my sponsor says, I talked to her Sundays, Tuesdays, and Thursday nights. So it was a Thursday night, I remember. And so we're at the end of, you know, we're on page 60, whatever it was. And I had gone through the method that she wanted me to follow. And she goes, okay, so it's Thursday night. The next time I talk to you will be 2 weeks from tomorrow at 7 o'clock, and you'll read me your fifth step. And she was kind of a scary, mean sponsor. And I was too afraid to say anything, but I was like, what about the 3 years? What about the 6 nights a week? What about? But do you know, I went from 550 pages to 6 pages, and I uncovered exactly the same, I get to exactly the same space to the word. Because, I mean, I don't want to jump the line here, but in my opinion, resentments are fears all dressed up to go to the prom. Once you get rid of the dress and the hair and the makeup and the shoes from a resentment, you have a shriveled up, ugly thread, an evil and corroding thread of fear. So that's like, for me, it's just super healthy. In my opinion, people are focused on the steps and nothing but the steps. They don't, you know, I mean, I called a friend once. Something happened at work, and I said, I need to do a 10th step. She said, okay. So I was like, blah, blah, blah. she let me go on. She goes, okay, so we know we're angry, like for 5 seconds. She goes, okay, we know we're angry. What are we going to do about it? And I was so mad because I wanted to complain and moan about what the circumstances were. But people in vision don't get distracted by that. I have found my own personal experience. Maybe it's just the people that I call, and I certainly don't get experience. And I tell people all the time, like they'll be calling me on the phone and, you know, tell me one thing or another. And I'll say, well, what do you think about that? You know, what's your experience? They said, actually, don't tell me. I don't care. The solution is this. This is what I have found the solution is, because, you know, my life is like a popular nightclub, or it used to be. You know, the problems would, someone would get solved or disappear, and the bouncer would say, okay, your next five in this room, go ahead in, you know, like it was just a revolving door of problems. And now I don't feel that way about my life anymore. My life, I just don't envision, you know, they're focused on the solution, not on the problem. Food is our problem. Food is not the problem, but they're focused on what the solution is, right? And food is not the solution that we want. And they know that, like, really to the core. So that's, I think, what the difference is.
Okay. Thank you so much, Nancy. That was wonderful.
Of course.
Yes. Thank you, Nancy. I'm sorry. I don't have a question. My name is Teresa, compulsive overeater from Edmonton. I don't know what to say. Thank you, Susan. Do you have a question, or can you say words?
No, I don't have anything. This has been wonderful, Nancy. Thank you so much. And I just want to plug the OA birthday party, because I'm going to, as you let me speak. And if you want to hear more speakers like Nancy and all kinds of incredible people, I will put the flyer again.